Welcome back, brothers and sisters. My name is A.B. Ridgeway. I'm the host of Financial Advisors Say the Darndest Things, and my mom's favorite Christian financial advisor. And we are back for a part two. This is very rare for my channel. I rarely do a part two to any video because I feel that I do a decent job of breaking it down the first time. But we have a very unique story here. I covered this maybe a couple of days ago, and it was a little odd to me. I was like, is this real? Or is this a skit? And I actually cut the video off short because there was a couple of red flags that I had. I was like, this can't be real. It just doesn't sound right. Maybe they don't know what they're talking about. Well, a part two came out and it sounds like this is real. And brothers and sisters, I was right when I said the general public really doesn't know how joint accounts work. And when I went over the pros and cons of a joint account, I was spot on. And what I'm going to do when I get to that point, I'm going to cut to the last video so you can see exactly what I'm talking about. But let's listen.
Yes, I'm here. Yes.
Mr. Laird?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Okay, I can hear you now. How can I help you, sir?
Okay, I spoke with a rep on last week, but I came in on September the 26th, and I was making sure that I had my ex off the account. And I was told that everything was done, everything was finalized with the paperwork, and that she was off. And then I called in last week and I found out that actually she wasn't, and it was like damn near $90,000 taken off the account. And I'm just trying to make sure that, you know, we get this taken care of ASAP, because she was not supposed to be able to take that money off the account. That's a fact. So the sooner we get this rectified and my money back in that account, the happier I'll be as a customer. Because first of all, I've been with you guys for a long period of time, as you can see on my file. And I just want this to be made right.
Well, brothers and sisters, he said something that I want you to pick out here. He said, I've been a customer of yours for a very long time. And this may be true, but sometimes at the very beginning of the conversation is not when you want to play that card. That card needs to be held until there is some negotiations that can go back and forth. I know it sounds weird, but you don't want to lead with, I've been a customer for a very long time, because you don't know what they're going to offer you. You are going to use that phrase or use that leverage once the negotiations are on the table and you need more and you need to squeeze that, because if you've used that up front, you can't use it again. I know it sounds weird, but just hold off on the how long you've been a client of theirs until they're unwilling to make any more adjustments. Okay, let's keep going.
Okay, Mr. Lynn, I just need to confirm the last four of your social before we can move forward. Can you confirm that?
9962.
Okay, and can you confirm the spelling of your last name for me, please?
L-A-I-R-D.
Okay, all right.
I'm sorry if I'm frustrated. I mean, if you had that amount of money withdrawn without your consent, I'm sure you would have the same sentiment.
Oh, I absolutely understand that, Mr. Laird. I see that you have, is it okay if I call you Mr. Laird?
Just call me D. D is fine.
D, okay, D. I see that you have $120.17 in the account.
How is that even possible, though, ma'am? What is your name? I'm sorry.
My name's Joanne.
Okay, I don't know if you know the last rep. Do you have my notes pulled up? Do you see what pretty much transpired with me?
I do. I see that you spoke with Katrina. That was the last rep that you spoke with. Is that correct?
Yes, Katrina.
Okay.
And she was just apologetic about the whole situation. And I don't want anybody to be apologetic. I want somebody to be forward thinking and seeing how we can get this thing back on track. Because there's no way that this woman's supposed to still be on the account when your reps told me that she was off the account. I went into the bank to make this happen.
I understand. So $120.17 is not what you
expect. No, that should be, that's actually embarrassing. I absolutely have more than that in that account.
I understand that, Mr. Laird. I understand. Could you hold on for a second? Let me just take a look at the notes here.
This is actually a bad look for the bank manager. Supposedly, she is looking at the notes now, but she's either one, lying, or two, not doing her job. First of all, before they get on the phone call, they'll talk to each of the parties involved. So they'll talk to the banker, they'll talk to maybe like the last caller, and then they will, you know, come up with the game plan. If a banker doesn't write notes, that's when they technically get in trouble. The reason is because we were always taught that notes beat no notes. You as a consumer, 9 times out of 10, are not putting any notes. You're not saying, I spoke to Katrina at 9:38. This is what I said. This is what she said. That's going to hold up in court. Now, if he does end up suing or doing something like that, Katrina is going to have a list of notes of what was said during those phone calls, and they're actually probably going to have a recording that they can actually pull if necessary. But those notes are going to be on the system, and they're going to protect the banker. So what was said or what was insinuated or something like that, as long as it's in the notes, people are going to take that as fact. So make sure you write your own notes so you know exactly what's going on. They don't have to be long, just maybe who you spoke with, the time, and a few bullet points about what occurred and what happened.
I see that you were here on September 26th
and yes.
You came into a branch, right?
Yes, yes. Okay. Let me, how about this? I don't want to waste your time. Let me speak to a supervisor, please.
Sir, I'm the regional manager here at the bank.
Okay, that'll work.
If you can get.
Yes, yes, you are exactly the person I need to talk to. And you said your name is what?
Joanne, sir.
Joanne. Okay, Joanne what? Let me get this whole thing. Joanne what?
Joanne Clark.
Joanne, hold on, let me write this down because I don't want to have no mishaps. I don't want nobody to say, who did you speak to? And I don't have a reference to fall back on. Hold on 1 second.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Joanne Clark. Mm-hmm. Do you have an employee number, Joanne?
No, sir, I don't.
Okay.
I'm the regional manager.
I got you.
Yeah.
Got you, Joanne Clark.
So I see the 120 and 17 cents. I do see that there was a withdrawal for, it looks like, 89,000. Let me confirm this number. Could you give me 1 second?
Yeah.
Let me just confirm this number. Okay, yes. It looks like there was a withdrawal of 89,250 on the 1st of October. Is that correct, sir?
I didn't withdraw it. Are you able to see that?
I see that there was a cashier's check withdrawn. Yes, I do.
Okay, and it didn't come from me, and I did not authorize it. So whatever you guys have to do, I would prefer you guys just let's just expedite this and get this thing rectified.
I totally understand. Could you hold on again? Let me just take a little look more into this. Just a second.
Yeah. So. Okay.
And I appreciate the length of time that you've been with our bank. I see that you've been a customer of ours for a very long
yes.
time.
And yes.
I appreciate we appreciate that. Just 1 more second.
12 years, actually.
I see that.
Yeah.
We love customers like you.
You see that right there? They're trying to calm down the temperature of the conversation with pleasantries. Does it work? Most of the time it doesn't. But they're going to say kind things to you, trying to let you know that they are on your side. Now, I'm not saying don't take the compliments as sincere, but this is a technique by calling you by your name, giving you pleasantries, thanking you for your business and letting you know how much they appreciate you, things of that nature, because they don't like losing business. No matter what they say, they do not like losing balances.
So, sir, as I'm looking on the account, it looks like you spoke with Katrina. You came into the branch. She made the, you could see it on the front when you log in that your ex is not on the account anymore.
Yes, exactly. Thank you.
Yes, yes, I see that. But I don't think she did it properly because I still see her as one of the signers on the account, which is how she was able to still access. Could you give me just 1 more second? Let me look into this real quick.
She was still a, wait. You said she was still a signer on account?
She's still considered a signer on the account. She did not fully take her off the account. Just her name, when you open up, you couldn't see her name anymore, but she's still a party to the account. And that's what I see. Yes, hold on just a second.
Oh, hell. Okay.
Yeah, sir. I see the withdrawal made. And
okay, so wait. So let me ask you a question. What's your, Ms. Clark?
Yes.
All right, so let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Are you telling me as of right now, today, she has never been taken off this account?
So let me clarify, sir. Thank you for that question. She is removed from the front of the account where you can't see when you log in, you don't see her name, but she's still an authorized signer and user of this account. That's what I see.
So let me, I just want to make sure I have total clarity right here. So mm-hmm. she was supposed to be off the account according to your documents.
That's correct.
But when you look further into it, I don't know, on the back end of it or whatever, she wasn't taken off. So
yeah.
If you see that she was originally on the front end, you guys are liable for that. Because you clearly see that I was trying to get her off the account.
So let me clear a few things up for everyone here. I know this is confusing, just a little bit, but I want to clear some things up with you. Like, okay, well, that makes sense. You know, he was trying to get her off and they didn't see it on there. So how was she still a signer? Well, there's a couple things. One, as the primary, you can request someone to get off, and it's usually a process, right? You take their name off and you delete them as a signer. You know, there's this whole thing that you need to go through as far as submitting those things. But during that process, you need to get the proper signatures. If the signatures are not done, is what the banks call a NIGO, N-I-G-O, not in good order, stands for not in good order. So the paperwork is NIGO. Now, as far as him not getting a phone call saying it's not in good order or this person didn't come sign, now that's a whole nother conversation. I don't know, because typically the banks are not going to reach out to that individual to get those signatures. They are going to want that person to come in to sign themselves. And usually the primary will come in and tell them, or they, in most cases, that person comes in and removes themselves. A lot of people don't necessarily get off of accounts willingly, like saying, hey, this is a joint account, get off my account, come sign this so you don't have any rights to my money. It usually doesn't happen that way. And I think you can see why it doesn't happen that way, especially when you have that amount of money. But in the last video I talked about, it doesn't matter how much money you contributed to a joint account. If you are on the joint account, you are entitled to 100% of the money. And that's what we saw. She snatched all of that money, even though he was the one, we are assuming, put a majority, if not all, of the money in that account.
Yes, I see that. Katrina's new. The thing is, you got to sign, have her sign paperwork, and you have to sign paperwork, and you both didn't. And so, because you...
Well, why would they tell me that? Well, okay. Well, why would they tell me that I was good to go, and I was back to... I was the primary on the account, and nobody else was on the account. Why would they dismiss that information to me if it wasn't true? If you guys are going to be giving information that's not true and not... And not be thrown on your end, how am I liable for you guys to mess up? That's $89,000. That's $90,000 that's going out of my account that I didn't okay, but you guys made an error on your end.
I totally understand, Mr. Laird. But do you remember when the both of you came in, you both signed onto the account together at the same time?
Yes, I do recall that. But me being the primary, but let me just say this. Me being the primary on the account, I was told that at any time I could take her off the account, and I didn't need her permission. That's what, because I'm the primary. That's what I was told by your representatives.
Yeah, I see. Katrina's only been here for about a week and a half.
That has nothing to do with me, ma'am. That don't have nothing to do with the price of tea in China. I asked this woman to have me have that. Was I off? Was she off? And she assured me that woman was off my account. And now it's $90,000 missing, and it's a whole lot of, I'm so sorry, I understand. But you're really not understanding, because if you understood, you guys would make it your priority to get that money back into my account, which I did not authorize.
Brothers and sisters, this is getting hot. This is getting overheated. But I want you to listen a little bit closely, because I know you want to side with him, and that's fine. And I know that you probably don't want to side with the bank, and that's fine as well. And I am very objective in this. I am biased toward the bank only because I know the process, but I'm also sympathetic to the client. And I'm going to tell you why. The frustration this client is going through is that he is repeating what he understood and probably not what he heard. He agreed that when him and his ex-wife came in for the first time, and they weren't exes at that time, they signed together. But then he had this statement, if I want to take them off, because I'm the primary, I can take them off, right? Without their permission or whatever it may be. That's what he understood. Now, when he was first signing on, I don't think that was a question he asked. How many of you are going to be in front of your wife and say, hey, let's open this joint account. But Mr. Banker or Mrs. Banker, if I want to take her off at any time, I can do that without her permission, right? How many of you would have that conversation in front of your wife? Not many. Is it possible? It is possible. Is it probable? Not really. But we still want to give him the benefit of the doubt. So let's say that's what he understood, right? Now, I'm going to give you another caveat as far as the bank is concerned. You cannot necessarily leverage what the banker says. It's really about what's in the contract and how it is set up. The reason is because when you sign and the bank signs or they give you paperwork, that is a contractual agreement between you and the bank, not you and the banker. Does that make sense? So when you are talking to your banker, they are only facilitating the contract and things within it, not necessarily anything outside of that scope. Now, the bank can hold the banker liable for, you know, not telling the truth. They can let her go. They can transfer her to another bank. They could just say, hey, this is not working out, or whatever they want to do to her to reprimand her for a bad experience. But as far as the legalities, the contract of signing up that joint account between you and Chase Bank as the custodian, that is between them and what's in that contract. And I talked about that in my last video about how joint accounts are operated in a majority of banks. Once again, each bank is going to be different, but a lot of them, when it comes to joint accounts and how they're structured and how they operate and how you put people on and take them off, is pretty much a template. They're across the board. So if you can find a bank that's different, you might be able to find an exception, but guess what? The exception does not negate the rule. And you know what? Let me do this. I'm gonna play the video where I go over the pros and cons of a joint account, and this is going to make a lot more sense to you. Check this out. The little banker mind of mine is starting to think like, maybe the bank needed her signature to get off. Now, I'm going to put this caveat here, and this is why this is so complicated. If you're the primary on the account and someone else is the secondary can remove themselves without talking to the primary account holder. So the primary account holder typically has their social security, their address, everything else like that. Then the joint owner can add on as a secondary. That person can remove themselves, like, hey, I don't want to be on this account. I just want to separate myself, whatever it may be. They could just leave. But the primary, they're the ones that's going to have to get the approval of the secondary person in most cases. And once again, this may be bank specific. I don't know. Some people cut corners. My bank does it. My credit union does it. I don't know. Maybe they did. Maybe they weren't supposed to. I'm not saying this is a general rule. I'm not saying this is a law. I am just saying that find out how your joint account actually works before you get burnt like this individual. See, does it make more sense now? You know, if you come in together, sign, you need to sign off together just because you both are entitled to both of the money. And it's not right that somebody can contribute money and then get kicked off. Let me give you an example. Let's say this guy, he didn't put any money. He's the primary. He started the account with $1. He gets married. And he tells his wife, hey, I want you to come onto the account. She deposits $100,000. And then he decides he wants to kick her off because he's the primary, right? So he says, I want to take her off. And she's kicked off and her $100,000 are left in the bank. Now, is that right? No. That's what that signature protects them from. So they're protecting this client and they're protecting the secondary, who, even though they're acting as a secondary and their name is secondary, they are both almost like this, what do they call those things where it's like, it's not an oxymoron, and maybe it's an oxymoron, like little Bigfoot and a small giant, those type of ideas. It's almost like a primary and secondary on a joint account. It's like a misnomer. I think that's a better name for it. It's a misnomer because even though one's primary and one's secondary, they're both equal, if that makes any sense. So there's no priority there. The best way to describe it is a joint owner where they're both 100% owners of that account.
And she was saying something about putting a stop payment on it. There's no way you're going to put a stop payment on something that was already, that's damn near 2 weeks ago. No, there's no stop payment. There's no stop payment that's going to be on. That woman probably didn't cash that check. So all I'm saying to you, and I, again, forgive me if it sounds like I'm coming at you with it, but I'm really passionate about losing $90,000 that I thought I had.
Yeah, I
you guys,
Mr. Laird, in the future, just so that you know, both of you will have to sign off on the account.
That's not what I was told, Miss Clark. I was not told that. Miss Clark, listen to me. That's not what I was told. Now, I'm not trying to defend Katrina. Katrina didn't handle it. Brian or whoever, a dude named Brian was in the branch. Katrina was the last person I spoke with. Mm-hmm. Brian assured me that everything was on the up and up. And now you're telling me we both have to sign? I'm thinking, if I'm the primary, why do I need her? Why do I need her permission to take her off if I'm the primary on the account? That don't make sense to you?
That's an excellent question, sir. So, Mr. Laird, the way that we operate here in the bank is when there's two people that are on an account, because we've had people go through divorces and things like that, we don't allow one party to take the other off.
But I'm the primary, Ms. Clark. Why is it? That don't make sense. Like, if I'm already living in a house and somebody else moves in with me and I've brought them into my house, why don't I have the permission to put them out whenever I want to put them out? Same thing with banking. I'm still the primary on it.
Yeah.
Great example, right? But brothers and sisters, I already gave you the rhyme and reason why. Can you figure out why that analogy doesn't make sense? Are you ready? I'm going to explain it to you. He says, if I have a house and I own a house and I invite someone in and they come into the house, why do I need their permission to get them out of the house? Here's why. When you move in with somebody, he is assuming that that person is not contributing to the household. They are not contributing to the mortgage. But in the bank system, we are assuming that if you join that bank account, that you are actually contributing and you are entitled to part of the compensation. So for example, in your house, if you are paying into the mortgage and you are paying down that debt, you are entitled to the what? The equity in that house. So someone moves in, let's say you have a $200,000 house, you paid it down to, I don't know, 150. The person comes in and they pay $100,000. So now you have $150,000 in equity in your house. And you go, I have $150,000 now in equity. I can just kick them out. And you kick them out. How fair is that? It's not fair. So yes, if they came in, they contributed nothing, then yeah, that's a problem. Once again, if you have a bank account, why are you inviting someone who is not making contributions into it? Right? See, that's a legitimate question. Why even add them to the account if they're not going to contribute anything and they're going to have some rights to the account? Because you love them. They're in love, right? And she said it. Some people go through divorces. I definitely get that. But watch this, brothers and sisters. The reason we add people who may not be contributing to the account is because we want them to have access to the money and to use it. And when we want them to stop, unfortunately, once we give them permission, they have some rights. We can't just add and delete people as we wish and take their money.
With all due respect, Mr. Laird, there isn't anything that I could do at this time.
What
we can do is we can get you and we can get her in. And I
can- She's already cash. I promise you. Can you look at your? I'm sure you can tell if the cashier's check has been cashed. Am I correct? Can you just look that up for me, please?
Yes. Could you give me 1 second, Mr. Laird?
Yeah.
I see Brian issued the check.
Yes.
I do see that.
And you see, I didn't have any approval on it.
No, I do see that. But again, Mr. Laird, she is a cosigner authorized user on the account, which is why she's able to still access.
Okay. Hear me out, Ms. Clark. Just hear me out. Mm-hmm. If your representatives told me that somebody that was a joint user on the account has been taken off, and then turn around in that same tone, tell me that that same person that was taken off is able to withdraw funds. That doesn't sound a bit confusing to you. That doesn't sound a bit floppy to you. That don't nothing.
Yeah, I definitely understand where you're coming from. But like I said, Mr. Laird, both you would need to sign that she's being removed and she would also need to sign.
But what if I'm the one that put her on as the primary? Why do I need her permission? Why do I need her permission? I'm the primary. She doesn't have any accounts with you guys. None. It's me.
So listen here, brothers and sisters, we're going to wrap up here in a little bit, but I do want to say this here. The reason I've let this play, most of the time I probably would have cut it short by now, but once again, we're really getting into the psychology and we're really getting into customer service and how to engage with his banks and have a better experience. What he is doing right now is kind of beating a dead horse. What he's doing right now is being repetitive. He's thinking just because he rewords his thought process or his logic that for some reason she's going to magically go, oh, that makes sense. Then let me make some changes. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. Unless he reveals some new information, all he's really doing is regurgitating the same information, maybe in a different tone, maybe, like I said, different word choices or something like that. But that does not get you any further in the banking process. Once again, he's trying to convince her, but she's not intentionally stopping him from getting the money. She is bound by the contract by which he signs and the logistics of the bank. And unfortunately, there's nothing that she can do. And that's what she's trying to articulate. But what happens is when clients do that over and over again, they're not being heard. So what happens is when a client is not being heard, they start to escalate things. So we start seeing like their voices start to go up, or maybe they start using choice words, or they start attacking people personally at the bank. They start talking about how bad of an experience they had. They start talking, making things up sometimes. They even make things up about individuals. I know a situation, I'll tell you this real quickly. I was in a situation, a woman was came from another bank. They needed to fax a document or something. They said, hey, can you fax this document? And you know, Office Depot is expensive and sometimes they're a few dollars. So I was like, yeah, I can do it. Just use the company thing. It's a bank transaction. So it's all fair and legal. So I fax it over and I go, all right, here you go. And it basically it's a document for a transfer of stocks or something like that. So I fax it over, said, here you go. And then a few days later, she comes back. This didn't work and something's wrong. I was like, well, what's wrong? They haven't processed it yet. So I was like, okay, well, I went to the fax machine. I looked at the number. I was like, it says completed. I called the bank. I said, did you receive the transmission, you know, the fax that we sent over? And it was like, yeah, we got it. We haven't processed it yet. She's furious. And she's yelling at me and said, you should do something. I was like, I didn't do anything. I said, I don't even know what's really going on. I just faxed it over for you. And she went up to my boss and my boss's boss and said, he was so rude and he was mean and he didn't complete the transaction and I want some recourse. And I was like, you're not even my client. I said, I just helped you fax. And she didn't want to hear it. So once again, I have my notes. And she came in like 2 or 3 days yelling at me constantly until that transaction was done. And my boss, they went to the notes and they shut down her account. They said, listen, she doesn't need to be here. She's going to accuse you of doing something that you were not even associated with. I said, this transaction is not even for necessarily the bank. It was just being facilitated through the bank. And I was like, yeah, no, I don't know what that was all about. But you get clients like that who just want somebody to yell at because they can't yell at anybody else. So anyway, this man, he's going to escalate. And I'm sure the next things out of client is probably going to be like lawsuit. I want to sue. I'm going to sue you for whatever it may be. But there's really no recourse in this situation. If he wants to sue anybody, he needs to sue the ex-wife. Maybe she did it maliciously, you know, taking his money out. I don't know what he could do. I'm not a lawyer. This is not legal advice, but he could seek a lawyer, but he needs to direct that energy in the right direction. You know, we've been talking for like maybe like 8-7 minutes or something like that. He should be talking to his ex-wife saying, hey, where's my money? You know, like I'm going to call the police and we're going to do an investigation of why you took $89,000 out of it. Where'd it go? And why'd you feel comfortable taking that away from me? Because if there's an ex-wife, I'm assuming there's a court order. And the reason I say that is because if he only took her off maybe like a month ago, I'm assuming they separate. I don't know those details, but I'm assuming they separated. But when you separate, you go through the courts and she's entitled to a certain amount of money anyway. So if he gets a divorce and she's entitled to a certain amount of funds and he's paid those funds and then he can prove she took additional funds from him, he may have a case somewhere. I don't know. Like I said before, I'm not a lawyer, but I would think he would have some recourse if your ex-wife, who you have documentation, you are no longer together, you attempted to take her off and out of revenge or to be spiteful, she goes and she strips you of $90,000 and things that are on the account. But they may say the same thing. She's entitled to the account. She could take it. But unless there's something in the court order where they have to stop interacting or I don't know. Let's just keep going. Let's see. I'm thinking in my own head. I don't know if you're thinking in your own head. I know I am, but I'm trying to help him out, but I don't see anything that he could do.
So if I put you on, why do I need her permission to take her off?
Sir, it's just our bank policy. I wish I could answer that in a different way, but that's just our policy.
So again, has the check cleared?
Yes, I was looking into that.
That's what I'm saying. This woman has already cashed the check. And you guys have let this woman just run off with my money after you told me that she wasn't on the account anymore. Come on, man. Let's make this make sense.
Well, sir, it wasn't a check. It was a cashier's check. So it was she was able to deposit it immediately. And it looks like the funds cleared the very next day. So yes, that's
so y'all let this woman go with my money and I can't do nothing. Y'all didn't let this woman run off with my money and I just got to take it.
Well, there is something you can do, Mr. Laird. You can contact the police department and file a complaint with them, and they may be able to take it a step further. But as far as
let me take it a step further, Ms. Clark, I'm gonna hold you guys accountable for that. I'm gonna take legal action on you guys because your representatives, I don't care if they're incompetent or not, don't have them working in a bank. Your representative told me that this woman was not on the account anymore. And as a primary user, I should be able to take anybody off the account and put anybody on at my choosing. And because you guys dropped the ball on this, I'm not trying to... Listen, I'm not going after her. I'm going after you guys.
Yeah, that's it. Listen, I can't take that no more. I knew this was coming. For some reason, I just had a deep, deep feeling that that was coming. Like, all his energy is now at the bank. And he literally has no animosity for the ex-wife who took the $90,000, but he's taking his anger out on the bank who actually followed directions, which that's exactly what they were supposed to do. They were actually, you're on the account, you're a signer. They wrote the check, cashier's check. And if you don't know the difference between a check and a cashier's check is basically like an agreement that says this cash is in this person's account. It's available. So you can cash it right away. A check is like, it could be there. It might not be there. So just to know the difference between a cashier's check and a check. So typically when you are trying to buy a car or something like that, and they need to know that you actually have the funds, they'll ask for a cashier's check, not necessarily just a check, because you can bounce checks, but you can't, well, maybe you kind of can, but maybe in some situations, but it's hard to bounce a cashier's check because it's a verification that those assets are there. And typically the bank is going to lock up those assets when they print out the cashier's check. So if it's for $15,000, they kind of lock up those $15,000 until it's cashed and things of that nature. But anyway, that's a whole nother conversation as far as processing on the back end. And maybe rules have changed, so I don't want to give you any bad information. And plus, we're not in the banking system anyway. But what I did want to point out is that once again, he's directing his anger in the wrong direction. And brothers and sisters, we're not going to get anywhere if we do that. Brothers and sisters, that's why we need our financial five, our financial advisor, our tax accountant, our lawyer, our power of attorney, and our executor. His lawyer needs to go after the ex-wife for taking the $89,000 out of the account. Now, during that process, if they figure out that the bank has some type of liability and he should get some type of recourse, that's great. But don't target the bank. Use all your time and resources to realize there's nothing there. Now you wasted all your money on your lawyer to go attack the bank when you should have put that money toward finding the ex-wife and getting that cash back. So brothers and sisters, we have to redirect our energy in the right direction that's going to have the maximum impact on the outcome that we want. So the outcome that we want is that we're trying to get our money back. Going after the bank and their policy is not going to work. What he can do, though, is he can call, he can learn about the process, how it happened, document it, share that with his lawyer, and figure out how his wife was able to get that done and bypass that system. Okay? Well, brothers and sisters, I'm not going to do a part three because I think it's just going to go into a whole nother different direction. I hope you learned something today. I'm a certified private wealth advisor professional with over a decade of experience. And these are the situations that I try to tell people. It's not always about stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and growing 10, 15% and things of that nature and debt management. Sometimes it's really about the small things like account titling. Something so simple. I said this in the first video. If you didn't catch the first video, I'm going to put it up here so you can actually see the full thing. But the idea is account titling is so important because he lost more money not having the proper account titling than he ever did probably in the market or over his whole lifetime. If you don't know anything, you can download the four pillars to Christian investing. It's going to go over debt management, savings, investing, and wealth transfer so your financial life can be strong. Once again, brothers and sisters, get your financial five. Well, that's it for me. My name is AB Ridgeway, and I'll see you on the other side of your blessing.